name is Barry Allen. I am the fastest man alive.
RandomChatter.com presents a Flash podcast.
You see that red blur?
Dedicated to the discussion of the Flash television series.
A lot to discuss.
Scarlet Velocity.
Run, Barry, run!
Thanks for slowing down for a moment to listen to Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm...
Come on, you can do it. It's all right.
Bet-San-Susi. Man, I don't think I can keep doing this. I'm sorry. I feel like this joke just keeps bombing. I feel like I lost a bet.
You lost a bet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. No. You just keep it up. Because you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show, The Flash. With lots of discussion and commentary and bets on various episodes. So my friend Bet, also known as Jay, is going to tell you about the episode that we are going to cover this week.
This week, would you prefer paper or plastique? This is Season 1, Episode 5, Plastique, which aired on November 11th, 2014. A great episode. Not one of those titles that it seems like we can do a lot with, but I think we'll be surprised here.
No, you can do a lot with plastique.
You can do a lot with plastique. It's great for shaping and molding and obliterating, things like that. This episode was written, first time I think we've had an episode written by three people. So Aaron Helbing, Todd Helbing, I'm assuming they are related in some fashion, and Brooke Elkmeyer. And then directed by Dermot Downs. And let's see. This week, in an explosive episode, Barry falls for a beautiful bombshell. Man, I mean, she was dynamite. No, seriously, really, she could blow things up with her hands, like a bomb. Bet-San-Susi, a.k.a. Plastique, is a former explosives expert for the Army. But the particle accelerator had other plans and gave her very dangerous abilities. But, you know, she's really not the problem. It's actually General Eiling who wants to use her as a weapon for the patriotic duty of defending this country from people who need to be blown up. Eiling's former rival, Harrison Wells, knows how dangerous he can be, so he will make sure Barry can keep the team's new friend away from that determined general.
What's with these evil generals that we always have to deal with?
Well, I think in these sort of films, you know, when the liberal media gets in there and kind of, you know, they set up things for, you know, politicians and army people and things like that, they really, you know, just try to, you know, put a lot of fake things going on and just try to, you know, undermine the value of this country. I read
it's
that
all
online.
A plot. It's all
I read
plot.
That online somewhere.
Well, you know, it is. People do. What's the saying? You know, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts
absolutely
a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's just, you know, it's. I think, you know, from a long time from, you know, in the past year, people have just had, you know, misgivings about secret army, you know, what they, you know, they're holding aliens somewhere on a military base and they're doing ESP experiments and all this kind of stuff. Nobody trusts these people. And of course, you've got people with extraordinary powers now. And so, of course, why not, you know, imagine that the army is involved in that somehow or the government's involved or something.
Yeah, well, Eiling is a good character for that because he's definitely a very unlikable guy.
Played by the very cool Clancy Brown, though.
Oh yes, Clancy Brown. On the other hand, is a very likable guy, especially as an actor. He's
yes.
played a lot of really cool characters.
A lot of cool bad guys too.
Yeah, both live action and voice talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's been working in the DC universe as a voice actor for quite a while. So anyway,
what we will get into him just a little bit, but let's talk about just a little bit of news this week. First of all, there is some news of some casting of, now I don't know this actor. Do you know this actor? Luke Roderick?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with him. I had not been familiar with him before, but someone had told me what other show he'd been on, and I can't remember what it is now. Oh, it's Supernatural. I guess he'd been in some episodes of Supernatural.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so he's actually going to be playing Jason Rush. Is that how you say that? That's how
I think it might be Rush. Rush,
Jason Rush.
With a
okay.
CH.
Rush. It looks like Rush. Yes. But anyway, who's also another character from Firestorm Comics. Getting a lot of Firestorm characters in
That's
the
weird.
Flash. I know. That's strange, isn't it? Well, I wonder why. But we got a lot of Batman characters in Arrow.
That is true, too.
So they like to cross over. But Firestorm may have to come and claim some of these people. But so Luke Rodriguez, and just this may shock you to know, a good-looking actor. On a CW show. I don't know if that's a trend that you see on CW shows, but...
No, you know, actually, I hadn't thought about that. I was just... he's young.
It's funny when I talk to my... You know, I think I've mentioned my dad is a fan of this show and of Arrow. And so every time I see him now, you know, he mentions it to me, and we talk about the show. We talk about our show, and... But one of the first things he always says is, why are they all so good looking? I have a hard time telling them apart sometimes.
Yeah, that is true. Well, now, what does he think about Dr. Wheelchair, Professor Wheelchair?
I haven't asked him about him specifically.
Because he's, you know, our generation. He's older than us, I think, actually. I don't know.
A little bit, man. Yeah, I'm going to say yes, just because he's probably not. I'm going to find out he's younger than me, and then I'm going to feel bad. But I haven't asked him about him, but I don't know. You don't think he's a good-looking guy? He's a pretty good-looking guy.
You know, he's okay for a Canadian.
You can send those emails to... all right, so... So Luke Roderick. So another thing, you found this. This was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And this would apply, I think, in this episode, too, because Flash saved somebody with his super speed, just kind of a bystander, just like you see him do in the beginning segment, the title sequence there, where he saves the bicyclists, the bicyclists from getting hit by a car.
Right.
So you found, I don't know if this was a study by someone, I didn't really read
so,
who it came from.
Yeah,
but
it's the, I think it was It's from the UK. I'm pulling it up now. It's the
University of Leicester.
Leicester.
Sorry, all the UK citizens there.
They don't pronounce all their letters.
but the Department of Physics and Astronomy. But I couldn't tell if this was just like some professor's study or a student's project study. But
yeah, I don't know how it fits in. But basically the. The premise is that physics students have calculated that the physical impact of being rescued by the Flash is, in fact, more damaging than being hit by a car. and I'm thinking back to the characters that he saved from Captain Cold in the theater. That's, you know, just... I mean, imagine being, you know, he's going 600 and some miles an hour, and then he grabs you. I mean, imagine the whiplash for that. But, you know... comics, you know, and all, you've got the speed force that helps, which they don't mention in the physics paper because, of course, you know, they don't.
Yeah, geez, they did not take that variable into account.
They just don't understand. I know. you would think, I mean, there's been a lot written on this and that they would just, you know, annotate and check their sources, but I think they were trying to do it as if it was in the real world, you know?
I see. So. All right. So there's no sort of speed force field protecting you as you get in the Flash's bubble or something.
Right. But I don't even know what you just said, but...
So as you get within, you know, a certain distance of Flash's body as he's going fast, it protects you from G-forces and wind and that kind of thing.
G-force.
G.
Yes.
But... it would make it a completely different show if every time he saved somebody, you know, he grabbed them and, you know, he sets them down somewhere and their head's missing because it flew off. So
they just exploded.
You know, their eyes burst out of their head or so. But it's always kind of interesting to do this, and I like that this kind of thing kind of keeps it in the mainstream eye. You know,
I like that you know, there is the view of certain by certain people that academics are stuffy. And the fact that you can have, you know, a physics department actually put out a paper, you know, that is serious. It, you know, it's in some of the in some ways, it's some of the same kind of discussions that we have here. But they're doing it from a very scientific standpoint. It's like, all right, you know, it's kind of sure. like a Mythbusters, right? You know, could this happen? And I think that's really cool. Like you said, it keeps in the public eye, but it also, you know, it's fun. It's something that, and it allows them to use, you know, the tools that they've had to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for to, you know, learn, I guess.
Well, hey, you know what? They've got interest too. And I spend much of my time pondering these things with you. So totally worth it. And like you said, it's fun. I don't think it was ever meant to, you know, put a bad name on the show or the character or anything.
No, I don't think so at all.
But people, I think, sometimes see it as that, and then they see when things are not realistic, especially these days. It kind of ruins it for them, or they don't even give it a chance, or they badmouth it. Like, that could never happen. Of course it could never happen. It's entertainment. That's what makes it fun.
I've got a list of some complaints about this particular episode here I want to go over. I got them right here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I'll just sit back and enjoy it.
This is crazy. No, you can't enjoy this. How does this happen? Like this. Window washer. He's working at night. What the heck is up with that?
And well, then a big building.
So
daylight savings time's over.
That's what I was thinking, too. It's like, oh, it's just getting darker earlier now. How did Bette hold the flashlight and the files at the beginning, yet everything else she touches explodes? Yeah? Yeah? Okay, tell me how that happened. And then Barry's suit explodes off his body, yet his pants are okay, or his underwear is okay. Boxers or boxer briefs, there was inconclusive evidence in my house for the answer for that.
Yeah, was there? Yeah, we had to rewind that one several times, too. Thinking back, I'm wondering why my wife wanted me to rewind it so many times. Yeah.
Look, Lightning did give him abs.
Maybe maybe his unders. maybe they're made of the same stuff like the Hulk's pants are made out of.
Oh, yeah.
Which they
never, were kind of purple. You
know, were they? Yeah. They never clearly rip off of the Hulk. So, again, totally different comic book that would be if.
Anyway, but, those are my biggest complaints about this episode.
Yeah.
The
well, they did give you some sort of physics, true or not. I didn't go back and verify, but that, you know, he found out how fast he would need to be going to run up the side of a building.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's
really, I mean, really fast.
Yeah. I enjoyed this episode. It really did kind of push some of my believability, my level of believability, you know, my the ability to just, you know, forget how things work in the real world. But The Flash is fun, so I roll with it. But, you know, when I saw him run up, you know, and I knew he was going to do it. It was in the commercial, but I'm just like, I'm pretty sure, you know, like, the faster you go, I don't think you stick to the glass, especially after they just said, you know, this is not a Roadrunner or a Bugs Bunny cartoon or whatever it was.
That was a good scene, though. See, I like but, that. What if I get a bunch of mattresses and stack them?
Yeah. Well, and then they say it's not a, you know, a Roadrunner cartoon. He's like, okay, but make sure you continue accelerating or continue the same velocity once you get him on your way down. And they're like, otherwise what happens? And they go, splat. Which is, of course, what happens to the coyote in the Roadrunner cartoon. So I thought that was a nice continuation of that whole joke. And the fun writing and stuff like that, you know, the levity that the characters have for the situations is, it's contagious. It makes me want to have fun watching this. And, you know, and there's parts that are a little darker than that, but that's what we're here to talk about. So.
Oh, sure, sure. So it if they weren't fun, I mean, you know, if the characters themselves weren't enjoying themselves a little bit, it probably would make this show a little less easy to tolerate when things like that happen.
Right.
You know, if they were trying to make it realistic and serious, then I don't know that we would buy it. I don't think you can do that with The Flash.
Which will be interesting to see how they work with the crossover that's coming up, too, because they will be having some more, you know, serious-type characters coming on.
Yeah, and there are differences, despite the fact that they're in the same universe, there are differences that they want to use in the show. I saw an interview with Stephen Amell, and he was saying how they use the, you know, the metahuman idea, the superpowers, to introduce the Flash character on Arrow. You know, they use that. But now that he's got his own show and he's off kind of on his, in his own city doing his stuff, they're really going to get away from that in Arrow. But right. yet they're going to have this crossover still. So Barry will be with Oliver, to what capacity, you know, we will see. But, you know, you gotta take that stuff for what it is. And even when it shows up in places where you don't expect it, just enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm rolling with it.
You're rolling with it. All right. You're running with it.
Yes.
We run with things on this
often
show.
Often running.
So. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about a few little things here. There was a lot of mention of friends, especially at the beginning. You know, they're hanging out in the bar, trying to get
monologue.
Drunk. Yeah. Trying to get drunk there. Clearly, he doesn't want to like Eddie. I guess I get the feeling, you know, where there's no real legitimate reason to not like the dude, but you just don't want him anywhere around because he's got your girl.
I guess so. I mean, you know, he seems like a pleasant enough guy, and that is probably the only, like you said, legitimate reason that Barry would not be interested in wanting to get to know him better. I mean, he's working with his, you know, ostensibly his dad, you know, as his dad's partner and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't know if it's one of those things. It's like, do you get closer to Iris by getting friendly with Eddie and hoping you can kind of worm your way in there, or, you know, just accept it, or kind of like Barry's doing, just kind of ignoring him, I guess.
Look, you gotta do what's right, okay? You have to be, especially if you're a hero like Barry. So you hang around Iris, you be civil, and then any chance you get, you sabotage Eddie and, you know, make him look bad.
I just love to see him, you know. I want to see one of those scenes where they're sitting in the bar, they're having drinks, and Barry just runs over and, you know, pulls down Eddie's pants or something like that. And, you know, it's like, he's like, what the heck happened? And then, like, messes up his hair. And
I was wondering, and I don't know that this could even be verified when I watched it again, but it almost seemed like he was doing that with the darts, like he was helping Iris.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, they didn't really make that obvious, but I mean, she got a bullseye there, and then you know, he wasn't doing so hot, so I thought maybe he might have been doing something with the darts, but they didn't really
that's an interesting idea. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I mean, I saw her get the bullseye, but I was just like, oh, you know, maybe she's good at darts. Who knows?
So I do like that they talk about the friends, though, because he's getting closer and closer to Caitlin and Cisco, and they're really kind of, you know, they're integral in everything that he does. He could not do this hero stuff on his own, which is a little different than the comics. I don't know that I've ever really felt that the Flash comics used a team as much as they are in this show. It's another way I think they're kind of making it more realistic.
Yeah, he's got his friends in the comics.
Sure.
And there is a team aspect, especially in the New 52. There was a storyline about some characters being trapped in the Speed Force that, you know, kind of had to team up to work together to survive or escape. But, yeah, that's the thing that's always kind of interesting, because he's always kind of the loner, because he's always going so fast, right? There's no one that can keep up with him. And he has to fight those teams, you know, like the Rogues, villains and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't – other than, you know, working with the Justice League, he really doesn't have anybody in his own
nobody book. like a network where he's
– Right.
Where he's got that. So that's cool. I think that's kind of another way they're bringing it to the real world, you know, with live actors to make it feel good. I guess in the 90s series with John Wesley Shipp, kind of did that too a little bit with Tina McGee.
Yeah, he at least had one confidant for that.
Right, right. And she would help him, too, with whenever he had scientific issues that she could help, because, you know, she knew science.
Right.
So
Star Labs.
But, you know, one person that really doesn't seem to be gelling as a friend is Dr. Wells. And we know from what we have seen, you know, how he continues to manipulate things behind the scenes to accomplish whatever his ultimate goal is, which we still don't know.
He is being such a jerk. I used to think he was a stand-up guy, but now...
Oh, yeah. Oh, too soon.
Two-faced.
So he uses Plastic to try to kill Eiling, who he has some history with.
Yeah.
So General Eiling has worked with him, I guess, in the past, but tried to use his stuff for weaponry again, you know, just like he was doing with Plastique.
Yeah, it appears they had worked together from about 10 years ago to about 5 years ago. There was mention of them having started working together 10 years in the past on the gene therapy for soldiers, and then they got into doing the mind experimentation stuff, which it seems like is what they were working on when they kind of split in the little coda piece that we saw at the end of this episode.
Sure. So what did... See, my question about Wells is, does he think he can't use Barry for things like that because he just knows Barry too well? He won't be a killer. He won't take care of things. I mean, it almost seems like he could use Barry and manipulate him in a way to get some of these things taken care of for him. Or was it just convenient to use Plastique?
I think, well, what we know about Wells is that he appears to be wanting to protect Barry, right? Because we saw, you know, from anyone that would take advantage of him, of course, except for him, right? Because it seems like he's taking total advantage of Barry.
Right.
I think he knows a lot of things about Mr. Allen, or Barry, as he pronounces it. For whatever reason, just when Tom Cavanaugh pronounces his name, it just sounds a little off. I don't know if it's part of his accent or what, but
that's how they all speak in the future.
Okay. But I think he would not have asked Barry to take care of Eiling. He might have, but he seems to know Barry so well, probably better than Barry knows himself at this time, time being the operative word there, that, you know, he knows Barry would he'd go talk to him, but he wouldn't, like, do anything because he's, you know, too much of a Boy Scout to take care of it. So I feel that his using Plastique, bet to go and take care of Eiling takes care of two birds with one stone, potentially. Should it work, Eiling would be dead, and that would be someone out of Wells's hair that, you know, he may not have anything currently against him, but obviously they had their grievances in the past. And potentially would get Plastique out of the way as well, because I think he would assume that she would be killed. Because of the knowledge of future events, it's probably hard to say, you know, does he know that if he sends Plastique to try to get rid of Eiling, that it doesn't work and that Plastique actually dies? I don't know if, you know, his level of information goes that deep. It would be kind of interesting to know.
That was my next point because, okay, so we're assuming that he is from the future. Or he certainly, you know, has a lot of knowledge about the future.
Right. He's got a gray sports almanac in his closet.
That's right. And we also know that he's been around Central City for a while. I mean, he was working, what did it say, 5 years ago when they was that scene with Eiling?
Yeah. So 5 years ago, he was working with Eiling at Star Labs. So he'd been working with Star Labs for at least 5 years. And just to answer a question we had, I think as far back as the premiere, he was wearing his glasses at that point. So he kind of always wears his glasses. He can take his glasses off even in the past, before the accident. So just FYI.
Okay. He can take them off in the past.
Yeah, just, you know, I'm just trying to fill in some holes in our knowledge here.
Well, that's true. You know, you got to get those puzzle pieces together. You never know when the tiniest little thing might give us a clue about something.
Right.
But, okay, so What was I? Oh yeah, yeah. So
sorry.
No, that's okay. Because he's been here for at least 5 years, probably more than that, because he was working with Eiling. So we're assuming, you know, for a little while.
Yeah.
So he, if he came back voluntarily, did he come back to a certain time to cause something to happen? Or to be around when Barry did get his power so he could protect him? But, you know, you say, does he know that Plastique will die when she tries to go kill Eiling? He has changed so many things already, we're assuming, in the past. So is the future even going to be the same? So I don't know that he has the knowledge of exactly what's going to happen already, because he killed that the one guy, the guy that he stabbed.
Simon Stagg.
Jeez, yeah, my names aren't coming to me tonight. Sorry, I've
been
sick.
That's okay.
Simon Stagg, because he assumed that he was going to use Barry in, you know, for his own means. Mm-hmm. So automatically killing Simon Stagg is going to change the course of Barry's life.
Right.
So how much could he really know about the true future from now on, if he's changed all these things?
That's true. We also do not know the nature of the way that they deal with time travel here. Does something that happened in the past change an artifact that you have from the future? So, like, he's got this newspaper headline in whatever future technology. Is that immutable? Like, because he brought it back with him or has access to it in the future, like, will that change as he changes things? Or is it, you know, like Back to the Future, you know, has, as you change things, that changes the future, you know, almost immediately as the parents don't kiss, the kids start fading away from the photo. Or have things happened in a future, and when he goes back in time, whatever you do, it doesn't necessarily change the artifact that you brought back, you know. So if you have a newspaper, you just have a newspaper that is got future information on it, and it just doesn't change. So, I don't know. All good questions, no answers.
Or, of course, maybe he just knows that he did things in the past, so he isn't changing it. It's just his his future. So, okay, so...
But I didn't even think about that. Like, if he did come back in time, like, boy, he has been around for a while. So, I mean, that's a long... You know, you talk about these mastermind kind of characters that have, like, a long game plan. The one that comes to mind that is, you know, the most evil that I can think of is the Emperor from the Star Wars films. You know, the more you find out through the prequels, I mean, this dude had been planning stuff since, you know, for like 30 years. He'd been working out this whole plan and stuff like that. So, you know, that's just, it takes a lot of patience to, you know, go back in time and, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, however long he's been hanging out, just waiting for Barry to get created. And then it's like, then now I can get started on whatever he's doing. I don't know. I'm intrigued. I want to know what's going on with that. So,
all right. So we'll keep an eye on Wells, of course. And we've already kind of speculated who he might be or what he might be doing. So we'll no new clues to that this time around. Nope. Just that he doesn't like Eiling. So
he does not. Yeah. Well, I think everyone's got good reason not to like Eiling. I mean, even if he's just, you know, an ass, I think that's like the basic reason. And then I think there are other levels on top of that point to he's not a really good character. And I'm sure he'll be back, and I'm looking forward to it. I enjoy Clancy Brown. I think he's a great actor. He's a great character actor. People know him from, Highlander. He was the bad guy in Highlander. He was also in Earth 2. He's done the voice of Lex Luthor on the some of the Superman animated movies recently and stuff like that. So,
mm-hmm. Darth Maul's brother, right, on Clone Wars?
He was Darth Maul's brother on the Clone Wars. Yes, that is true.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, since we were talking about Plastique, let's just talk just one more thing about her. At the end, she goes to confront Eiling, mm-hmm. And then Barry goes ahead and he gets her killed. That was nice of him.
He's not paying attention, man. I mean, he's standing right in front of this general. It's like, oh,
really?
I'm sorry,
yeah.
I didn't see that guy.
It's just at least, you know, keep one eye on him or move her away or something. It's like, okay. But he takes her out in the middle of the
bay?
Ocean? Bay? Yeah.
Yeah.
Where is Central City?
It's supposedly in the center. I mean, it's like supposed to be. I think it's supposed to be. Let's see. Chicago is hub city. Central City is supposed to be like in Kansas, maybe, or something. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, there could be a big lake there.
Maybe it's Central Coast City. I don't know.
Well, hey, Chicago's got you know, water relatively close by. The Great Lakes aren't too, so it could have been something like that, I suppose. But
maybe it's like the Twin Cities, in Minnesota by all the lakes or something like that.
Could be. Either way, he takes her out there and drops her off, lets her explode safely in the water, and we see the explosion. But is she really dead?
Oh, totally.
Totally.
Totally. Maybe not.
Totally, maybe. Okay, there you go. That's
I'm going to go on record and say that I'm pretty sure that she's absolutely, possibly not dead. So I think that covers all my bases right there. Here's the thing.
Boy, you're sticking by it. Here's the thing. What?
They in the comics, of course, everybody dies at some point in a comic and comes back. I think you were mentioning that we just need to come up with some other word that means dead, but not really.
Yeah, exactly. So a comic book word that means, well, they died, but they're not really dead. They're going to come back. We call that mostly dead.
Yes. Maybe pulled a Superman or something like that. I don't know. No, that's not. They went to the farm. No, that's not. Anyway, but
send him to the farm. I like that.
So her abilities manifest a little bit different in the TV show than they do in the comic book. She seems a little bit more like the character of Gambit from the X-Men movies, where she can kind of supercharge an object and make it explode at some point, but she just doesn't have very much control over it. There was also reference to her being, quote, a human bomb, which is interesting because there is a human bomb character in the DC Universe, part of the Freedom Fighters, led by a character called Uncle Sam that fought during World War II. And his power was he could actually, like, he wore a containment suit and he could actually, like, boom, he could explode and then he would reform. So outside
that
the realm of possibilities.
Blows. Jeez.
Yeah.
What a horrible power that is.
Yeah. It's like, pull my finger. I don't know.
Okay, that's a funny joke, though.
You know, she was shot, right? She had the shrapnel in her. He drops her in the water. She explodes, right? I mean, there was an explosion. How about that? I mean, could she have been charging the water around her? Is she really dead? You know, I think she's dead for now, and if Kelly Fry is never available to be on the show again, the character will never come back. But should there be a need for an explosive character to return, then, look at that. She wasn't really dead. I don't know. I always get burned when I talk about somebody's dead on one of these TV shows.
Yeah, you got the Deadshot curse, I think.
On in Arrow, right? I mean, it's like, oh, Deadshot, great character. Oh, nope, they killed him. Well, no. It totally looked like he should have died, but I should have known better at that point. And, yeah, this set me off on the wrong path. So,
all right. Well, we'll keep an eye out for Plastique.
And I thought it was interesting. I mean, because Barry was really wanting to get her on the team, and I'm like, that's interesting. What's also interesting is Plastique in the comic books was one of the founding, well, no, I won't say founding members because she was drafted, but she was one of the, what do you call the very first group of people that are on a team? Like the
originals, the original group members?
I guess there's another word. But anyway, yeah, she was an original member of the Suicide Squad, along with Deadshot and the Enchantress and Blockbuster and Rick Flagg. So there is potential for her to still be around because I'm sure Amanda Waller is always looking for new recruits.
That's true.
We'll see what happens.
We will. Let's change gears just a little bit because in this episode we had some more character development from Iris.
Yeah, we did get a lot with Iris this week, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. She's really almost, I want to say almost obsessed with the Streak, who I guess we did see a scene where he could technically be called the Streak this week, yeah. Didn't we?
That is true.
Yeah. She's writing this blog, and Barry wants her to stop, so he kind of half-heartedly tries to convince her. He's a horrible liar.
Oh, my God. I was waiting for him just to blurt the truth, but...
Yeah, I was too. And actually, my daughter's like, why just tell her? Just tell her. Why is he keeping it from her? But I had to explain to her why I think he's keeping it from her.
He said to Joe, you know, the only way to make her really, you know, shut up about this is to tell her the truth. And, you know, to me, Joe's response is just canned. It's like, we got to protect her. It's like, dude... It never works out right. It's not going to work out the way you think it's going to work. You can't just protect somebody by not telling them the truth.
Joe, I think it kind of surprises me that he continues along that train of thought, because he actually – I really like Joe's character. I really like how they're writing him. He's not real stuffy. You know, he's not that that real strict – father figure that is unbending. You know, you cannot have these powers. It's too dangerous. You cannot go fight crime. You can't. You know, he's not like that. He's kind of a fun character. He's working with Barry. He knows about his powers, but yet he still loves him. Wants to keep him safe, and he wants to keep Iris safe, which is why I think he doesn't want him to tell her. But I don't know. I think maybe if he would really look at it. It probably wouldn't be that bad. She's going to find out anyway.
Yeah.
Eventually.
It's going to happen that she finds out, and it's going to be the worst possible thing, you know, and at the time.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about that there's going to be another storyline where this character gets really mad because you've been lying to me this whole time, and, you know, then they're really upset, and they never talk about why. You know, they never see the reason why these heroes are keeping the secret from them.
Right.
I don't know. That just doesn't... See, there's another thing that doesn't seem... It seems outlandish to me. I don't want to say it doesn't seem realistic, but in the real world, you know, people get mad when they get lied to and things, but these are huge things. I mean, you got to be able to see why.
Right.
Well, maybe not. I'm going around in a circle on this one.
And this episode set up... why, like, in a big way. It's like, you know, very blatantly, unfortunately, I think they might have been able to do a little more subtly, but I think they just want people to understand what they're trying to get at. But, you know, if one of these metahumans find out that she's really interested in the Streak, they might think she knows something, and then, you know, immediately they have something happen to her. Like, you know, it's like you're like, uh-oh, did somebody find out about this? No, it turns out it's just Barry, you know, running in to talk to her at Jitters. But I think that is going to come to a head sooner rather than later. I think, you know, they're going to be dealing with that potential fallout.
Right, but from a logical point of view, from the way Barry is thinking, that if she keeps writing this blog, you know, she could be in danger. So tell her so she understands why she needs to stop writing this blog and keep her safe that way. And tell her now when it's still pretty early on in your, you know, life as a superhero. It seems like he's actually probably making it worse by not telling her. I thought he was going to get through to her when he went to her as the Flash. But then it just got worse.
Oh, you're so dreamy.
Well, yeah, now she's more obsessed with him. She's putting her name on the blog, and Barry feels the need to break up with her. Don't they live in the same house?
See, and that's what my wife asked. She's like, where does he live? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, because I thought he lived in the house, but then I never see him go into the house. Joe's always at the house with Iris. I don't know.
Maybe we haven't seen his place yet.
We've seen him at the lab. Yeah, I don't think we've seen his house or his where he lives. Maybe he's living at Star Labs. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe he's got an apartment somewhere with a dog, a little golden retriever somewhere, pizza boxes laying around. That was John Wesley Shipp, wasn't it? That's
yes.
a different Flash.
What was his dog's name?
I was trying to remember. I can't remember.
Oh, okay. I'll
Buster?
Have to look that up later.
No, Baxter? No, I can't remember it.
No, it wasn't Baxter.
Baxter. No, that's Ron Burgundy's dog.
That was Ted Grant's dog.
Oh, was it?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
So, I don't know about this whole thing with Iris. It's kind of dragging out for me, this storyline. I like Iris as a character. She's smart, but yet, you know, got that cute kind of personality, you know, where she's kind of obsessed with the Flash, this Lois Lane kind of thing. But, I you know, the whole – I mean, don't tell her. That's fine. But don't kind of keep playing the same thing over and over. And if you're not going to tell her, then you need to act a little bit more nonchalant about it, I guess, whenever she brings it up. And they even mentioned how bad he is at lying when Joe told him he knows how Barry feels about her.
Well, again, he's a detective. I mean, it's I always find it amusing on shows where you've got someone who is a detective that they are trying to keep information from. I mean, it's like... in the real world, it would almost be impossible. There's some weird rules they've set up around that on Arrow, which we discuss on our podcast for that show. But here, I don't think, you know, this... I mean, Joe figured out that Iris was dating Eddie. I don't know how Iris cannot be that observant, you know, and... Obviously, Barry is trying to tell her stuff. It's like, why is he changing his mind? That is the lamest excuse. And she just kind of, she's in her own little world almost. Like, she's so absorbed with everything else that's going on, she's really not paying attention to what people are saying to her. Like, she hears their words, but she's not paying attention to the body language and all the other things that we use for communication.
Yeah.
She's kind of a ditz when it comes down to it, I think. I don't know.
A little bit. A little bit. She's smart, but you're right. She's a ditz when it comes to that stuff. I don't know. That thing's just dragging on for me a little bit. I would kind of like them to move that along. Maybe they will now that they've, you know, broken up, quote unquote. I mean, they're not really going out or anything. So, but
maybe they shouldn't talk anymore.
Oh dear, that's not going to make. Well, anyway, see, I just want to sit down with Barry and go, look, dude, you're playing this all wrong.
Heart to heart.
But I do like the character of Joe. I mentioned that. There was one thing that I noticed in this. Have you noticed he really makes his dramatic entrances? You know, he likes to do, especially at Star Labs.
Oh, he just busts right in.
Yeah, and he'll show up right at the right time and then give his 2 cents. He'll do that thing, you know, when people walk in the door and start talking right away.
Yeah.
You know, so you know they're there and, you know, they want the attention right there.
I'm sure you guys were all talking about something really important here, but I've got something I want to say.
Well, except with Joe, it's always related. I don't know how he heard the conversation before he got it. He must be waiting outside the door before.
And 3, 2, 1. Okay, here I come. It's almost like it's scripted. It's really weird.
You think? I don't know. It could be. It could be scripted. Okay, so I don't want to spend too much time talking about this because it was right at the end of the episode. But okay. It was in this episode.
Okay.
So I think we have to mention it. I
know where you're going.
It. You do? Okay. It was not the half-naked scene.
No.
That's not what you were thinking it was.
No, because that was at the beginning.
No, so they did a flashback 5 years ago.
Well, he was naked. I will just point
that
out.
That is true. Actually, this is not a half naked. He was full on nude, wasn't he? We got shown the flashback between Eiling and Wells, and what they were arguing about was this experiment that Wells was doing with a gorilla, and we found out that it was Grodd, and
Yay.
Of course. If you're listening to this, you know who Grodd is. Grodd is a one of Barry's arch rivals, his superhero intelligence.
Nemesis.
Yeah, nemesis. Yeah, that's the word I was thinking of.
Grodd is good. Grodd is great. Isn't that how the saying goes?
Yeah, I think there's more to it than that. I don't know.
I don't remember the rest.
Amen. So... it turns out that maybe Wells is responsible for Grodd as well.
It sounds like it because he has great things in the future planned. I love, you know, so besides all of the speed puns they've put into this show that they have characters say, every time Wells says something, he talks about a character's future or, you know, the cure for this hasn't been invented yet or other things that just beg to say, dude, you're totally from the future. Why are you saying this? It's like you're trying to give it away. But,
he's not giving him all these clues.
Yeah. Dude, I totally thought you'd pick up on this. Yeah, but Grodd is, well, in the comic books, Grodd comes from a from Ape City, which is somewhere in the dark continent of Africa. But it is a place where apes have evolved to be very intelligent. And Grodd is the evil ape ruler that wants to come to Central City for some reason. I'm not sure why he always picks Central City, but he wants to take it over.
It's got good lakefront property.
Enslave it, yeah. In the New 52, the character, the apes have some, what do I say? They have some involvement with the Speed Force, and so there's a big tie-in with the Flash character and the kind of the religious aspect of the apes. Like, they worship the Speed Force, if I recall.
Yeah.
And there's also another ape, they're all relatively intelligent. I think they can all speak, but there's another one, the good ape, who is known as Solovar, which I doubt we will see. But yeah, Grodd is an ape that is very big, you know, probably 7 to 8 feet or something like that, that is intelligent, may or may not have mind-reading properties based on when you read the comics and stuff like that, but is definitely intelligent, tactical, and, you know, kind of like, think like Planet of the Apes, I guess, you know, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot like Planet of the Apes. As a matter of fact, I was reading a lot of the Grodd storylines from the New 52, right, when the Planet of the Apes was out this year. So it had a lot of similarities, but Grodd's always been kind of a cool, classic idea for a villain, you know, just a super intelligent gorilla. But for some reason, there's something about him. I think just the way they illustrate the gorilla in these, but I am very excited about having him in this show. And I'm interested to see how far they go with him. He's right now in the modern day comics, in the New 52 comics, he is just brutal. I mean, he will, you know, eat apes' brains and human brains. I mean, he's just ruthless. I don't think they'll go quite that
Kneel
far
before
in this.
Grodd.
But I'm wondering if they'll even have him talk, because I think that would be pretty interesting. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you want to see?
Also, is it going to be like a man in a suit? Are they going to do it digitally? Is it going to be a mix? I'm interested about all those sort of things. I mean, I like the behind-the-scenes aspects, so I'm always interested to see how they, you know, pull stuff off like that. So,
well, and if they've gone out, you know, they've gone all out with the effects in this show. I'm not sure what kind of a budget they have for that kind of stuff, but I think they could probably, based on the, you know, how much they have in each episode, I think that they could probably use some of those resources to make a pretty good computer ape.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's coming up. Not sure exactly when, but
sounds like it's going to be this season based on just the rumor mill that's out there.
Yeah. I'm anxious for that one. I was looking forward to Captain Cold and Grodd. So I've gotten Captain Cold, and I definitely wasn't disappointed by that one.
Captain Boomerang for me. I'm waiting for him, but I think he's coming here at the beginning of next month.
I got Captain Boomerang, too. So, well, you know what? Anything else you'd like to kind of point out in this episode? As far as what we've seen so far this season, how would you rank this episode?
This is the fifth episode. I'd kind of put this in the middle. I haven't changed this. I still think the Captain Cold episode probably the best episode so far.
I'm with you on that.
Just in terms of characterization, effects, the villain. I mean, it all kind of gelled together. But this is good. We found out a little bit more about Barry, you know, and just what, you know, he really wants to help this person, this Bet. You know, he is pleased that she is a metahuman that's not trying just to, you know, kill them or destroy something in Central City. As they point out, this is the first one that hasn't wanted to do that. And, you know, Barry seems like one of those guys, you know, if he was running by and saw an injured puppy, you know, he'd like pick it up and nurse it back to health. Actually, in the in one of the digital comics,
just don't pick it up too fast because you're going to hurt him.
Right. You got to be gentle. He's running off to a crime scene and he's like, "Up, while I'm going," and then it's like two panels. He's like, "I saved all these dogs." It was like someone out walking dog, like nine dogs, and they got away from her, and so he picked them all up and returned them, you know, quickly, like I said, in two panels as he's running off. So we got a lot more insight into Barry, and you know, the mystery with Wells continues to deepen. He not only wants to, you know, will kill people himself, but you know, he is inciting other characters, and his voice just turns so evil. I mean, I don't know if you noticed this, but it's almost comical the way they do some of this stuff, because he's talking to Bette and he's like, you know, "I lost my legs, the use of my legs in the explosion," which is a lie. And she's like, "Oh, I'm sorry." And he's like, "Oh, I didn't tell it to you to garner, you know, your sympathy." And then he goes on, and then the camera kind of zooms in as he's talking about Eiling, and then it drops down so you're looking up at him. It's kind of a low angle, and he's like, "I need you to kill him," and he just, you know, savors the words. And I'm like, it's, if he had a mustache, he'd be twirling it almost in some of these scenes. I'm wondering how far they're going with this, and again, what that's going to reveal. So that was really fun in this episode as well.
Yeah, well, as far as my opinion, this was not my favorite episode. There was a lot of things I really liked in this episode. I liked when he ran up the side of the building, just as a cool, you know, nod to the comics and a cool thing that the Flash can do. Same with, you know, learning to run on the water and showing the Grodd. I didn't mind the actual character of Plastique so much. It's just the story wasn't as interesting to me as some of the other ones have been. I get why they're doing it, and it's kind of a transitional thing to introduce Eiling, I think, and to kind of give you another antagonist to worry about, but not as interesting of an episode to me, not as deep.
I can see that. Interesting little Jesus allusion at the end too, which I was wondering if they were going to go even further with it, but you know, they Caitlin talks about him running across water and that, you know, he's got something in common with somebody else. It'll be interesting to see if they you know, continue to draw any religious parallels here. There are, you know, they have stuff with the army. You know, they've talked about government stuff on here, so you know, it's just, I guess it's what the writers would be interested in talking about, but I thought that was just an interesting little one-off.
Yeah, well, and also showing, you know, they're illustrating what a good guy Barry is, because he, mm-hmm. he is a true hero, you know.
Right.
So
I was also wondering if they were trying to draw a parallel, saying maybe that Jesus was a metahuman, but I don't know if there's, I don't know, you know, I don't know. Not really trying to make a joke about that, just saying, I don't know. So
Wells could probably tell you. He could go back in the past and check it out. Maybe he did that too.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, there were a few little fun references in this, so why don't we run down some of them that we saw? We've already talked about some, but
yeah. So pretty much everybody that was mentioned in this episode comes from the comics in some fashion. Eiling, which is interesting. I didn't know how to pronounce that name. I was always calling him Eiling, but Eiling, I can see how you could pronounce it that way. He comes from the Captain Atom comic, which was another kind of metahuman character, a character that had been blown up and he got atomic powers. So it's a little bit like Firestorm, I guess. But he's a general there. He's been a mutant monster at times because he's died at some points. He's been part of the Suicide Squad. Plastique made her first appearance in a Firestorm comic, but also, as I mentioned, as part of the Suicide Squad. There was someone else that was mentioned, Cameron Scott. I believe that was Bette's emergency contact, which was Captain Atom's alias for a while, and it was also a character that assisted Captain Atom during his superhero activities, and would, you know, did some stuff in different storylines with him. There was also the doctor in this, Harry Hadley. This was the doctor that Bette confronted about the saving her from when the bomb had gone off and stuff. So he was one of the people that was working on the experiment that gave Captain Atom his powers. So actually, a lot of Captain Atom references in this particular episode as well, besides Firestorm stuff we talked about.
There you go. See, there's so many good characters in the DC universe that they can pick from for all these shows.
Yeah, and it's not the characters that people would know. You know, it's not the Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, you know.
Which is great.
Captain Atom, I mean, like, really, who besides someone who reads comic books has ever heard of Captain Atom? So.
Yeah, I always liked Captain Atom.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his early series, so. I think what was probably an interesting nod to Captain Boomerang while they were testing Plastique's powers and with the Frisbees and everything, and when Cisco comes up with the name, then Caitlin holds up a boomerang saying, "You really didn't think about this one, did you?" Which we know Captain Boomerang will be coming to this show and to Arrow during the crossover episode here in a few weeks, so I thought that was kind of funny. We talked about Grodd. This I didn't catch the first time through. In the bar sequence at the end and through the closing monologue that Barry does, which I enjoy the fact that he kind of opens the episode with a monologue and he closes the episode with a similar monologue, you know, reflecting on what he learned this week. there was a cover of "I Ran So Far Away" by A Flock of Seagulls playing. Now, I couldn't find out which one was playing in the episode, but it sounds very much like a cover by a band called Bowling for Soup. And if it is that one, they slowed it down maybe 25% or so because it was slower. It was a more melancholy version, which fit really well with Iris being really sad at the end and everything. But it was definitely not the version that was, you know, the Bowling for Soup version is a little bit faster than that. And then we also got confirmation that Barry is 25 years old. He mentioned that in this episode, so I'm just mentioning that for
all right. Time to move out. Come on, get your own place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he can't get drunk anymore, so that kind of sucks.
Yeah, he can just for like 10 seconds.
I mean, going back to my list of crazy stuff here. That like, how do you make something 500 proof? I guess because isn't 200 proof 100% alcohol? So
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's how they do it. So if something's 50 proof, that means it's you half that, and that's the alcohol percentage in it. So if it's 100 proof, it's 50% alcohol. That's what I understand. Now, she did mention it was something she said in suspension, so obviously you can have more molecules in suspension within the liquid. I don't understand. You know, it's,
well, it is Star Labs.
Yeah, it's Star Labs, of course. They can do stuff like that. So anyway, just one of these things, you know, I just kind of, they say there, sometimes you just are watching something and they say something and you know stuff about whatever they're talking about and you go that, and it just pops you right out of the episode. And again, that was one of those things. So it was silly, but
that's okay. Another fun moment with Barry and his friends. So, so, all right. Well, my friend, you and I, it is time for us to run.
Alrighty. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to leave feedback for us on iTunes. You can also contact us by email at scarletvelocity@randomchatter.com, which we've had a couple people do in the last week, so thank you very much. You can tweet at us on Twitter at Scarlet Velocity. And so if there's anything interesting you're doing there that is Flash-related, please feel free to tag us. That'd be great. And you can visit our Facebook page, where there's also some great discussion going on at facebook.com/Scarlet Velocity Podcast.
And you can also check out our other shows, Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and, of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, both of which can be found at randomchatter.com. And all of our shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you enjoyed this podcast, please, please tell your friends about us and spread the word. And remember, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for The Flash can be found at www.cwtv.com. The Flash and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.